All right, we'll go ahead and start with our second speaker of the RNA Club evening, who is Carol Greider. She is actually running two labs here and at Johns Hopkins. She joined UCSC back in 2020, right? October of 2020. But she actually started in California, UC Berkeley, in Elizabeth Blackburn's lab, where she discovered telomerase. And she's got way too many awards for me to list right now, but I guess the most memorable is probably the Nobel Prize in medicine and or physiology. Thank you. I knew I was gonna screw something up there. One of the two, which she shares with Elizabeth Blackburn and Jack Szostak. Yeah, I wrote these things down, didn't even look at them. All right, yeah, so it's my pleasure to introduce Carol. She's going to be talking about RNA makes DNA, but how much? The regulation of telomerase at specific ends.
Great. Thanks, it's really wonderful to be here. I'm gonna be talking about work of my graduate student, Sam Scholes, who's a student at Hopkins that's just finishing up for her degree. And what I wanna do here is I wanna give you just a little bit of background of a paper that Sam just published, but then take the rest of the time to maybe brainstorm some ideas about where we're gonna go next with this. And I explicitly, need to have the input of a lot of you RNA people here. So you'll see that I tried to get RNA into my title since I'm talking about telomeres. And since telomerase is a reverse transcriptase, RNA does make DNA. But we'll be talking about the regulation about how telomere length is regulated. So we'll be talking about telomeres, which are the ends of chromosomes shown here. And the telomeres are made up of tandem repeats of very simple DNA sequences. And my clicker is now. Maybe I need to reactivate it. All right.
I don't know how. Oh. Are you sure? Yeah, you have a pointer. Okay.
I have a pointer.
Yeah, so the middle button, hold the middle button down. That's the pointer. If you hold it down, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, change to a.
Okay, I can't do this without a pointer. I wonder if it's running out of batteries.
I remember having to hold it down for a while.
There.
Yeah.
Well, I'm holding two.
Oh, you're holding two of them down.
I'm holding two of them down because that's how you activate it. And then.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, okay.
Is there a stick? It's working.
Because I can see a stick on the.
Oh, there we go.
Because I can see the stick from Zoom, right? If I use it, the. All right. Okay. So here we go. So telomerase has to maintain telomere length. So at the end of the chromosome, we have these tandem repeats that are there at the end of the chromosome. And then during DNA replication, we lose repeats due to the end replication problem. And then telomerase can go ahead and, yeah, I think this is probably just running out of batteries. Telomeres can go ahead and act on the end of the chromosome to add sequences back onto the end of the chromosome. So telomere length is maintained around an equilibrium. So if you look at length versus the number of telomere repeats, you see that there's this nice equilibrium distribution. And this equilibrium distribution is critically important because if telomeres get to be too short, they cause a DNA damage and you get stem cell failure. And this leads to human diseases such as pulmonary fibrosis, bone marrow failure, and immunodeficiency. If telomeres are maintained and they're long, then cells will immortalize and we have predisposition to cancer. So maintaining this equilibrium is really critical for health. So southern blotting is a method that we usually use to measure telomere length in yeast and in other organisms. So if you imagine you have all of the different chromosomes in a cell, in the population of cells, and you cut just here in the subtelomere, and then you probe on the southern blot, what you see is this distribution of telomeres that recapitulates that equilibrium that I showed you. There's a few short telomeres, a lot of medium-length telomeres, and a few long telomeres. Southern blotting is a way that we used to do this, but recently what Sam was able to do is to use nanopore sequencing to measure telomere length. I don't think I need to tell this audience a lot about nanopore sequencing, but the critical thing is that you get very long reads on a single molecule. So Sam developed a method to use nanopore sequencing instead of the southern blot. And so what we do is we prepare high molecular weight DNA. And then we have devised a method where we can put a very specific sequence tag onto the very end of that high molecular weight DNA. So that's why we need it to be high molecular weight, so you won't have other ends. So we can tag that. And of course, all of the chromosomes are tagged. I'm just showing you one. And then we take that tagged DNA and we do whole genome sequencing with nanopore. And so we can get these long reads that go through the chromosome-specific material into the telomere, and then this tag that we put on the end. And we can bioinformatically filter for reads that have that telo tag and the telomere sequence, and then map to the yeast genome and determine telomere length and chromosome position. So this long read here, we require that it has the telo tag. You can tell how much telomere there is and also what chromosome it belongs to. So all the previous methods looked at all of the chromosomes together. Now we're going to be able to look at individual chromosomes. And so then what we do is we plot the distribution of telomere lengths on these violin plots. So when we look at all telomeres, like we would look at on a southern, we have this mean distribution of telomere lengths. When you start to look at individual chromosomes, if we look here at chromosome 1L, we notice that in three different strains, three different isolates of a particular strain of yeast, chromosome 1L was significantly shorter than the mean of all of the telomeres. 2L is significantly longer, and 3L is also significantly longer. These stars show the statistical significance. When you look at all of the chromosomes, you see that this is a pattern, that the individual telomeres are maintaining a length distribution, but those length distributions are different from each other. And yet they all add up to this grand mean of the distribution. So we were very surprised by this. We didn't set out to look for this. We just found it because we were doing the nanopore sequencing. So the first question that we asked was whether these would be maintained over time as cells are going through many rounds of cell division with some shortening and lengthening and shortening and lengthening. Yeah.
With the same chromosome, or the right and the left, usually the same?
No. So you'll notice there are some chromosomes that are missing. That's because the alignment that we were mapping to wasn't good enough. But there are some that look like they kind of correlate. Chromosome 8R and 8L are both short, but it doesn't hold up over all of the chromosomes. So we did this simple experiment where we took some yeast, we took a parental cell, grew it in culture for 120 cell doublings to allow shortening and lengthening, shortening and lengthening, and then plated again and took individual clones from that plate. So here's our parental and then our three individual clones. And what you see is that this chromosome specific telomere length is maintained across all three clones that had been grown in this liquid culture for multiple generations. So we have a very high concordance across all of these chromosome ends. This was very curious to us. And we wanted to ask the question whether or not telomere shortening was also chromosome end specific or not. And so what Sam did was to knock out the catalytic component of the yeast telomerase. And when you do that on a southern blot, you can see there's progressive telomere shortening. It's more between here and here because the first time you can make DNA, the telomeres have shortened a lot. So there's this progressive telomere shortening. And when we look at individual telomeres, you can see here is passage one, passage two, passage three, they're shortening, one, two, three. And when you quantitate all of those rates of shortening, what we find is that all telomeres shorten at a rate of about 5 base pairs per cell division. So what this suggests to us is that the maintenance of chromosome-specific telomere lengths most likely occurs at the elongation step, because it's not occurring at the shortening step. We wanted to know, is this something that's just unique to Cerevisiae? And so we did a collaboration with my friend and colleague, Brendan Cormack, who had done a very nice subtelomeric annotation in Candida glabrata, a distantly related yeast, to ask the question, would we also see that in a different organism? And so what we did was take one of his strains, growth with 200 doublings, and then do the same thing where we took 3 independent clones. And we found that, again, in Candida glabrata, we see the same thing. We see chromosome and specific telomere length maintenance. And this was only possible because the annotation of the subtelomeric region was good enough to be able to map our reads to that sequence. There's a lot of problems in mapping repetitive sequences near subtelomeres. But we found that this was quite interesting. So what we have then is we have a telomere length distribution that's really made up of individual length distributions. As my colleague and collaborator Tom Kelly said, every telomere has its own idea of what is long and what is short. They're all want to be individualistic. And this really changes all of the models for how you could even maintain telomere length distribution. And as I told you, it's critically important that we maintain that. So we're interested now in getting at some of the questions about what might be some of the mechanisms that could underlie these chromosome-specific differences. So some of the things that we put in the discussion of our paper, it could be subtelomeric sequences, chromatin modification, transcription, TERA, which is a telomeric link RNA, long non-coding RNA, tethering to the periphery, topological associated domains, or potentially other things.
You said before the very edges of this distribution. Does that imply that edge might not be there? It might be somewhere more in the middle. I guess I would have which chromosome is the catastrophe.
But this might imply, so the question is, which chromosome end is it that gets shortest fastest? This might imply that there is a particular chromosome which sensitizes more than other chromosomes. But what we don't know is, does every chromosome have its own idea about what is catastrophic? And that could be true too. We just don't know that. But we can look at in that experiment I showed you where we knock out telomerase. I only showed you the first part of the curve where telomeres get shorter. After that, you could select for recombination events. And so you can see 99.999% of the cells die, but then these survivors come out. And we could see those coming out way, way, way early. We could see these much longer telomeres. So I think we'll be able to get at those kinds of questions. Also because we could see changes in the sequence, which is I can get to later. So we want to look at some of these factors.
Do you have a way to shave them all off so that they're all starting?
I'll come to that. That's a great idea. The question is shave them all off and start the set. That's going to be one of my slides. You're ahead of me. Okay. So what we initially did was just look at the sequences that we did have. So looking at the telomeric sequences, this is an oversimplification, okay? But all these chromosomes, you have the unique chromosomal sequence, and you have this thing called an X element, which is a repetitive DNA element. There's a Y prime element, which is an ancient transposon that transposed to the end. So this can be between 5 and 7 KB. And then you have telomeric repeats. And so we wanted to look to see, do these chromosome and specific lengths correlate with the presence of one or more of these elements? So if we look here at chromosome one, what we know from our sequence and from the reference sequence is that most of the chromosome is shown here, this little squiggly here, this red. Chromosome one has two copies of this X sequence on the left arm and one on the right arm. Chromosome two has two copies of the X sequence and a Y prime, and then the telomere. So you can go through and you can map where are the repeated sequences on every given chromosome. And what that looks like in our strain is this kind of a crazy map. You can see X, you can see Y primes. And so there's three things that we want to test. Does X and Y prime structure at different chromosome ends correlate with their length? Does X and Y prime structure in different strains at the same chromosome correlate with their length? And does deletion of subtelomeric repeats affect end-specific, that's what Melissa was asking about, end-specific length? So I'll tell you the answer and then I'll show you the data. So I'll take you through a little bit of this, but the first approximation is that it doesn't, but sometimes when you dig deeper into sequences, you may find more information. This is not clear yet because we haven't looked at enough of them. So what we did, we just take our one strain and look at all those chromosomes that end with an X element. And when you do that, these are all telomeres that end in the X element. You still see the shifting around from the mean. So the presence of just an X element doesn't change the chromosome end specific telomere lengths. The same thing with the Y prime. If you look at just Y prime telomeres, it also still shifts around. So that's within a strain. If you now compare two strains, this is a strain S288C and W303. And between these strains, there are different subtelomeric sequences. So for instance, if you look at chromosome two and three, here you have two X's, and here you have two X's and then a Y prime. So you can compare between different strains and ask, is there a difference of the X and the Y prime? So similar subtelomeric arrangements can give different telomere lengths. So we'll look, for instance, chromosome three here in S288C versus chromosome three here. They have the same arrangement of the sequences, but they have very different telomere lengths in the two strains. And then another example of that same thing, here you have two X's and a Y prime, two X's and a Y prime, 8L, you still have very different telomere lengths. So again, this is at the very gross level. We really probably have to dig deeper down into some of the nuances of what the actual sequences are on these individual chromosomes. But just asking, is it this repeated element? It looks like it's not. Another example. The same structure, different telomere length. And then there's more evidence that X and Y prime is not a major driver of length differences. And then there's the boring thing, or boring result, where you have the same structure and you have the same telomere length, just for completeness. Right, so I told you that there are these repeated elements, but the real secret is that if you look at this junction, yeah. Yeah, we haven't done the statistical analysis to ask, does the BY strain or the S288C generally vary more? Or you're saying just longer? Yeah, that's interesting. When we wrote our paper, we wanted to keep it all in one strain just initially.
Yeah.
But then we've been now sequencing some other strains, so we have those to compare. That's interesting to look at. So the secret here is I'm showing you that this is like a Y prime and then there's just TG repeats. In reality, there is this variable telomere-like sequences at the junction between anything and where you actually have the telomere repeats. It's basically where old telomeres go to die, right? It's a telomere that's no longer functional. And so it's accumulating a whole bunch of mutations. So it makes a little bit of the definition of what is a telomere. We're starting to put in places algorithms to determine exactly what we can say where the junction of the telomere is. And is there biology in here to have something that's kind of telomere-like that may be playing some role in biology? So that's something that we've been scratching our heads about for the last couple of weeks. I won't tell you about any of those sequences, but I will tell you that one way to deal with it is just to cut the whole thing off and ask the question, what if there's no subtelomeric sequence? So one thing that's nice that you can do in yeast is this one-ended recombination to replace an endogenous telomere and subtelomere with non-repetitive sequences. So here you have your subtelomere and your telomere. You have a unique sequence here. So you take the homology region with the unique sequence, put anything you want in here, and then a tiny little bit of telomere. You just need like 40 base pairs. And when you transform that into the cell, you'll get the canonical homologous recombination that we would do for normally replacing a gene in yeast. And then telomerase will act and it will fill that out. And it fills it out. We've known this for many, many, many years, to be at exactly the distribution of the grand mean. So the question is, what happens when you look at individual chromosomes? So we hadn't set out to do this experiment, but we happened to have two strains around where we had done this experiment for other reasons. We put like specific binding site in here. And so we thought we would just look at those since we have them now. And when you do that, the wild type is shown in green, this chromosome 1L. When you completely get rid of all of the subtelomeric sequence, and there's just a unique sequence there, it's a little bit shorter. The wild type for 11R is shown here. And when you truncate that chromosome, it gets a little bit longer. So we don't know the answer yet.
How many unique double lengths after the combination?
These were strains that we had around for other experiments in lab. We would have to go back and calculate that. Uh-huh. What we're doing right now is we have a strain that has four chromosome ends that are all truncated in the same strain. These were two different strains. We were doing an experiment where we're going to truncate every single chromosome and get rid of all of the subtelomeres and see what it did. And we only got partway through that. But we had made four of them, or Ariel, an undergraduate in the lab, had made four of them. So we're going to do that carefully now and take it be sure we know how many doublings there are that are differentiating it. So this is kind of a little bit of a conundrum. And also the two telomeres that we happen to have were both short ones. I would wonder what would happen if you looked at a long one and you truncated that. Okay, so I'm just going to go quickly through this. Chromatin modification, of course, chromatin modification affects transcription, which affects the presence or absence of the link RNA that's at the telomere. So these are all going to be related to each other. And of course, they're related to the sequences that are in the subtelomere. So it's not like these are completely independent variables here. We just did one experiment, and we did this in collaboration with Raymond Wellinger, a colleague that works on telomere silencing. There's this set of proteins, SIR 2, 3, and 4, that regulate histone deacetylation and telomere silencing. So if you have a binding site here, which is in the telomere, this SIR 2, 3, 4 complex, here's a nucleosome with a acetylated histones, that this SIR 2 will deacetylate, and then you can get spreading of this deacetylation in the chromatin. And so a colleague, when our paper was up on bioRxiv, said that he had this hypothesis. He'd also thought that there were chromosome N-specific telomere lengths. And they thought that SIR3 might be regulating this. So we sequenced his strains for him. It's been known for a long time that if you compare wild type to SIR3 telomeres, that they're a little bit shorter, not a lot. In our bulk sequencing data, we see the same thing, wild type and SIR3. And we look at individual chromosome ends. Some telomere shorten, but not all. So here's an example of 3L. This is one that Manny was saying looks really long. But when you delete SIR3, it gets shorter. 8R, you delete SIR3, it gets shorter. 11L, you delete SIR3, it gets shorter. But that's not always the case. There are some that remain absolutely the same. And this doesn't correlate with X or Y primes. So again, there's new data. We need to go in there and look initially the conclusion is that silencing through SIR3 doesn't globally regulate telomere individuality, but it's clearly doing something to a subset of telomeres. Okay, transcription and TERA. There was an experiment that was done by Dan Gottling and Ginger Zakian and Issa Sandel, 1994. What they did was they constructed a yeast chromosome where they put a gal UAS in a Tata box right next to the telomere. This is their little diagram of the telomere. Telomeres have evolved how they've been shown over the years. That's the telomere. So they put a gal UAS in the Tata here. So then they could turn on transcription with gal. There's a northern here. There's a bunch of loading controls for a bunch of different strains. I'm just going to show you one of these. This particular construct, which is the experimental construct, when they grow this in galactose and they do a northern and they probe with the telomere probe. This is now RNA. So you're now making RNA from that particular chromosome end. And when they take that construct, this construct here, they look at three independent clones, glucose, galactose. The telomeres clearly shorten when you drive transcription through them. Okay, so this is kind of an artificial construct, but that can happen. That doesn't mean that is what's happening in our individual telomeres, but it's an interesting to note. And bulk telomere length didn't change. Just that one, they probed uniquely for that one telomere, and that one telomere changed, but not bulk telomeres, which is individualistic. All right, so now we come to TERA, a length RNA of mysterious function at the telomere. This is a field in the telomere research area that is so confusing that I have avoided it for many, many years. In fact, Aliona came to me 2 months ago and said, oh, I hear that there are these long non-coding RNAs at telomeres. Wouldn't that be interesting? And I said, don't go there. the literature is so confused. You know, sometimes in a field, you can have kind of muddy literature, but sometimes you have a dominant negative. You have a lot of stuff that's just so opposite of each other in multiple different labs that it's actually a negative thing. But TERA does exist. This guy, Joachim Lingner, was the one that originally found it. His papers make sense, although the diagram I stole from this review, this is supposed to be a telomere in blue. And then you have these RNAs, RNA polymerases here, RNAs coming off. And one of the interesting things that I learned from this review is that all of these TERA RNAs 7-methyl G capped, which will be important for something I want to ask your advice on for an experiment I want to do. Some of the RNAs stay associated with the telomere. Some of them form R loops. So this is DNA with the RNA bound forming an R loop. Some of the RNA is around in the nucleus. Some of it is poly A minus. Some of it is poly A plus. Different ratios depending on whose papers you read. So some things that are known, it's transcribed from the subtelomere into the telomere. The promoters are not known. In humans, there's some idea that CTCF may play a role because in the repetitive sequences, there's some CpG islands. In yeast, it's not clear exactly where the promoters are, probably somewhere in the subtelomere. It's 7-methyl G capped. Only a fraction is poly A plus. Some fraction is chromosome associated. And the presence of this long non-coding RNA is conserved from yeast through many organisms up to humans. What you can read in the literature is sometimes people say, having TERA around shortens the telomeres by R loop cleavage. You can get a cleavage event here where you have an R loop. That there are higher amounts at short telomeres. Some of the experiments say TERA blocks telomerase from the telomere, so it inhibits telomerase. Other papers say it recruits telomerase to the telomere. And then there was an interesting paper that said it forms cluster and phase separation, which is all the rage, phase separation, and actually suggested that maybe individual chromosome ends individually recruit telomerase through these phase separated blobs, which is kind of interesting because they proposed individual chromosomes through their chromosomal sequence. So the literature is messy, and I've never been one to just want to go and clean up literature to clean up literature. But I think that given that we know that transcription in the telomere changes telomere length, it might be something that we could potentially do an experiment or two to help clarify. And the reason is nanopore. Nanopore can come to the rescue, right? So the idea that I want to propose is I can't poly A plus select out this RNA, but I could immunoprecipitate against the trimethyl G cap and not have all that pesky ribosomal RNA around when we do a total RNA prep. I guess we could spin out ribosomes and give them to Harry. So this is the thought that I'd like any kind of feedback on. The idea is purify trimethyl G capped RNA from yeast. I don't know how easy that is. I haven't done anything like that. And then do direct nanopore sequencing of the RNA. And of course, in the same sample, the DNA and the telomeres. And then map to the chromosome ends those RNA reads that will give a quantitative information on the level of mRNA expression from each unique end. The caveat, of course, is if the promoter is in the subtelomere, the RNA will not map uniquely, but we have ideas about how to get around that, which we could talk about. So I think that if people that do direct RNA sequencing think that this is a feasible experiment, I'm happy to talk to you about that. Because we have the nanopore working, and it would give us a quantitative readout. All right. So what regulates? A lot of other chromatin modification out there besides SIR repression. Transcription, well, we know transcription can do it, but is it doing it in this case? Tara, don't know. And of course, it could be a combination of several of these factors. It doesn't have to be just one unique factor. This was all of the work of Sam Scholes, who is going to be graduating in the next couple of months from Hopkins. And here is Sam when she came to go kayaking with us at the Kayak Connection here in Santa Cruz. Just wanted to put that out there and see if anybody has any ideas about nanopore sequencing tomorrow.
Just a simple old geneticist thought is, can you use translocation to study the shift of a telomere and its associated sequences from one chromosome to another?
Yeah, can we use translocations? I think that's kind of what we're doing, where we're putting a new sequence onto the end of a chromosome, because we can put whatever we want there. So we could make our own translocations. The trouble about using translocations that exist is that the subtelomeres recombine like crazy in between these two strains that are related to each other. They're like highly recombinogenic. So we would be changing multiple things at once. But so we want to kind of go about like surgically getting rid of what's there and putting something else back.
But you suggest that the subtelomeres don't really matter.
I don't know yet. We're doing the experiment. I showed you two chromosomes and there wasn't much of a change. So I don't know that we know that the subtelomeres matter. Susan.
So one scenario is that the chromosome ends with the longer telomeres compete better for the machinery. And have you or others altered the ratio of telomeres to telomerase machinery? Haploids, diploids, chromosome fusions. So So there are fewer telomeres titrating out some of the machinery. I'm not sure it gets to the mechanism. It might give you additional.
So telomerase is haploinsufficient, both in humans and in yeast. So all the I told you about patients that have too short telomeres, those are heterozygotes. Telomerase heterozygotes have progressive telomere shortening. And that's true in yeast as well. So we could look in a heterozygote in yeast. Overexpressing telomerase is more difficult because there are four components, you have to all overexpress at the same time. So that's a little bit more difficult, although it has been done. I'm just trying to understand though, if you have more or less of it, how that, you know, how one telomere is maintaining an equilibrium, right? What one chromosome thinks is its shortest chromosome is much longer than what another chromosome thinks is its longest chromosome. And how you set up that that dynamic. But looking in heterozygotes would be a simple thing to do. We know the telomere shorten in heterozygotes. Do all the telomeres shorten? When we knocked out telomerase, they all shortened. I don't know if it's been shown that those shorten the other telomeres, but that's because there's about as many telomerase molecules in the cell as there are telomeres. So there is a high copy linear chromosome. You would expect that might shorten other chromosomes. But wouldn't that be similar to knocking out telomeres? I don't know.
Yeah.
Josh.
Can you show this early? The W303 their chromosomes that were different between those two strains?
Yes.
You thought about making the point?
Huh. I haven't thought about that. we do a lot of tetra dissection anyway.
I'm just wondering, I mean, it's sort of a classic trans kind of question.
Mm-hmm.
I think with nanopore, you could probably get.
Yeah, there's enough differences in the subtelomere, and that's one thing that we were thinking about doing. In the subtelomere, to know if you can map these things uniquely, it would be a nice bioinformatic experiment to go in and get unique k-mers in the subtelomeres for each individual chromosome, and then you could uniquely map any RNA to a given chromosome. I'm just learning about k-mers. It's like a kindergarten k-mer person. But that same thing would be useful for the experiment that you just suggested. If we had unique k-mers, I guess it'd have to be unique to the two strains.
I don't know about the first.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that I think there's SK1 is a strain that has a lot of SNPs. Yeah, but I think.
And then we could map it in the subtelomere and see the SNPs in the subtelomere.
I was going to say,
has a
whole, like 96 fold, 8 set of spores that come from the ones that have the SNPs all mapped. That's a resource.
Right, we'd have to sequence the individual guys.
Yeah, but if it was a different.
Mm-hmm.
How are you tagging? You have put telo tag on the end of it. How do you do that?
For the RNA or for the DNA?
Well, for the DNA.
Oh, yeah.
You could do it for the RNA.
Do we need to for the RNA? Can't we just map the RNA to the?
If you tag the RNA. Specifically, only sequence telomere.
I see. But the yeast, we do sequence a whole genome and it's easy. So we could sequence a whole RNA, don't you think? I mean, I don't know, you sequence RNA, I don't.
Sequence.
Right.
I don't, there's ways to add the motor specifically to the target. So
got it.
They don't have to. Well, the exact imprint, I don't think it matters in this case. The 5'
And we don't know what the 5' end is.
Right, so you want to attach a tag to every telomeric RNA sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And then read all of those until you get to some of this.
Mm-hmm.
And the sequencing is 3'.
Oh, I thought
it was.
Oh, because in the DNA, it's 5' to 3'.
Right. 3' starts.
Okay. Because I know that we can't sequence total RNA because there'd be too much stuff.
Yeah.
And we can't do poly A purification, but I don't know how 5-methyl G IP would work.
You could try that. There's a cap capture approach. Get to the very end, actually, the last 15 or so goes past the motor.
Right.
Races. So they have methods for adding actually barcode DNAs through a linker that will go through the core so that you can be sure.
Got it.
And I don't know what that means. It just seems to me like just being able to add the motor to telomere PR.
Yeah, and we did develop this method to tag the end, but it was like a year and a half to develop that method. So
it's a
ligation. So it's basically a splint ligation because we know a little bit of the telomere.
Yeah.
Actually, we add poly A. We take the 3' end, we add poly A, and then we come in with an oligo that is oligo DT and a couple of base pairs of telomere to anchor it, and then have a unique sequence after that that's long enough that this whole getting through the pore thing is
an issue. You can, the direct RNA guys end up with, they start reading DNA, actually, because it's part of the
so we can just take what we're doing for our 3' end of our telomere and do it for RNA. That's good. Yeah. We have a fill in step that involves the polymerase, though. They have to do it with RT. We fill in the gap. Because you have an overhang, and then we fill in the gaps to make a blunt end so that we can then polish and put the stuff on, but I know I'm happy to talk to you about that.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm hesitant to wade into the murky world of this link RNA. The literature is just crazy.
Do it.
Here's some
there's no questions. Tavlo says, yeah, just barcode each end and sequence. You did have a hand up from Susan Carpenter, but she has lowered it since then.
Do you want to ask something, Susan?
Take care of us.
Is your sound on?
My sound is on, but it's very weak.
Turn it up a little bit, maybe.
I don't see how I can do that. I don't have my sound.
Okay. As long as you can hear, or I can turn mine on. Susan says Manny answers the question.
Oh, okay.
This is like a game of telephone right now.
Sorry.
All right, well, thank everyone for staying late and listening.